Welcome to Podcast Ed, podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Redefine's executive editor Matthew Ladner sits down for part two of his interview with Sherman Dorn, professor and director in the Division of Educational Leadership and Innovation at Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College on the campus of Arizona State University. Ladner and Dorn continue to seek common ground on Florida's A-plus plan. Thank you for listening and enjoy the interview.
So I believe in 2006, you wrote a book called Accountability Frankenstein.
Yep, came out in spring 2007.
One of the reviews I read of this book said the book is actually far more nuanced than the title, and you should read it.
I, along with many others, were confident there was an audience for a book that was skeptical of accountability. And David Berliner and Sharon Nichols and a bunch of others, and we didn't catch that audience. Diane Ravitch did.
Mm-hmm.
She proved that our supposition was correct.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could have caught a little bit of the tailwinds in terms of readership.
I'd say that the focus groups I saw show that as well. My tribe is, at least many in my tribe now, look at this as a series of top-down attempts to hold schools accountable, which almost in sort of a have elicited this antibody response of people who of various sorts, not just teachers, but also parents who are not happy with all of this. We think that the way forward on accountability is to have some sort of academic transparency, which is important, although not even everyone agrees about that, but that the vast majority do. And kind of let parents, that choice should be the actual de facto accountability. Now, he just made a skeptical face, ladies and gentlemen. So now, this may be us, the everything looks yellow to the jaundiced eye, but tell me your take on this.
I think that the hope that choice would solve all problems is like any argument that policy X will be a panacea.
Oh, let's just put it on the table right now. There's no such thing as a panacea.
All right. So as long as we're agreed on that.
The standard has to be, can it make things better than it is now? Okay. Not, can it make it perfect?
Okay. I think that the evidence on that is really mixed in terms of acknowledging that the empirical research on school choice in the United States, and this is whether you're talking about magnet schools, charter schools, voucher programs or their equivalent, ESAs, and I don't think actually there's that much empirical research on inter-district choice.
Not nearly as much as I'd like to see. No.
But the evidence on it, the way that I read it, and I'm a consumer of it rather than a producer of that research, is that there's huge variation in the direct participant effects. And the research on what some people call competitive effects shows real clustering, and admittedly this is primarily around achievement tests as the outcomes, clustering at slightly positive but really, really close to zero. Something that prompted David Figlio a couple years ago to say at the Association for Ed Finance and Policy, well, this is sort of the way that he sees it and it's not surprising to him. I actually am a little bit surprised because I thought there would be bigger variation. And part of that maybe it's just really tough to do studies of competitive effects. Part of it is the same messiness of policy that you think is going to be the consequence of top-down policies.
Yep.
Also happens when you construct something like a system, no matter what you include in, that you call choice. Probably the, I mean, like the a really good evidence of this is from the Credo studies, which shows that there are some, and using the, this is another Stanford group,
yep,
that looks at primarily, but not just, achievement test results in charter school students and what they try to create as reasonable comparisons. And there are some systems and some places, and this is pretty consistent with other research, that have pretty clear benefits for participants on these measures. And some others, probably the best known are virtual charters that have consistently really lousy results. And that's all encompassed in this vague term called choice.
Right.
So I'm skeptical of it.
Well, so like there's like in the last, I'd say, 5 years in the choice community, there's been a notation of some, you know, it's almost like, was it Hamlet said to Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy, right? We see things like, for instance, studies of test scores in charter schools in Florida that don't find positive effects. But then longer term studies that, you know, when you go and look at these kids as 25-year-olds, you do find strongly positive effects. And we're kind of puzzling through what to make of this, right? There was an assumption, right, among a lot of this research that standardized test scores were strong predictors of longer-term outcomes. Turns out they're not non-predictive, but they seem to be more weakly predictive than we sort of assumed. And I think that we need to sort of puzzle through that.
I like the book by Harry Brighouse, a group of economists and philosophers of education called Educational Goods, mm-hmm. that basically says that we need to care about the long-term outcomes for children, and they also have lives as children. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the educational equivalent of the third formulation of Kant's categorical imperative. You have to treat children, it's okay to treat children as means to whatever adults they're going to be, but you also have to care about what their lives are like as right. children. So not only should we take individual studies as often very good, but single studies, but we also should take individual measures with a grain of salt, and it all matters mm-hmm. to some extent.
Right. But it appears to some of us that we are like the you know, the late night partier on Bourbon Street looking for his car keys under the lamppost because that's where the light is, right?
Yes.
You know, it's obvious that we need to broaden, and this is happening, right? We need to broaden the number of dependent variables we have in these studies. But, it's an interesting time. Now, getting back to your Frankenstein book, I mean, like, have your views on this changed since 2006, or are they broadly similar? Or let me put it this way, what should a testing system look like?
I think an accountability system still should use some quantitative measures as screening, which was what I said 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the things that were more fragile at the time were some things I had drawn from the existing empirical literature about the effects of test-based accountability systems. I was writing in 2006, and there's been some additional research, there's been some indirect attempts to estimate what the effects of No Child Left Behind were like on states that did not have accountability systems at the time that the law was
right.
passed. I'd have to go back to sort of summarize that. I completely missed at the time the trend towards districts having so-called benchmark tests. At the time, I was skeptical that it would be practical to do something like formative assessment as the policy for accountability. Formative assessment being shorter, lower stakes, more frequent assessments, and
the second you use it for accountability, it stops being formative, right?
Well, I mean, like, there was research before No Child Left Behind about the effects of formative assessment that were not in terms of education policy, although there was one school district in the Midwest that had had formative assessment as a requirement throughout the district for a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. That was sort of like the shining example of it for special educators who yep. focused on it. What I missed was the way that testing firms would sell benchmark tests to local school districts, and that this would become the face of formative assessment. This is the type of test that Seattle teachers in one school district refused to carry out as a labor action. They were not stopping state testing. They refused to administer the local benchmark test because they saw that as, well, what I've seen in some districts is it's used not to guide instruction so much as to push a panic button halfway through the year. Where do you need to push down the screws on mm-hmm. site administrators and principals? So I missed that. I completely missed that. I'm still not sure what the right balance is, other than it cannot be a brain dead algorithm. Mm-hmm. And that I am fairly sure that the democratic workings of education politics aren't going to see the end of standardized testing anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm not either. Although, you know, when you see something like a large bipartisan majority in the United States House of Representatives pass a federal opt-out requirement, right? Only the federal government could simultaneously require testing and then require an opt-out, right? Which is wrong on multiple levels, right?
Well, a number of states have that. And the state of Arizona has this odd, we're going to have a state test, but then local districts don't have to use it. They can pick their own.
Yes, it's called a menu of assessments, and it's going to be, if it gets implemented, it'll be at the high school level, which is now permitted under ESSA, although the Arizona legislation passed before ESSA passed, so it's a little messy. Yeah. But, I mean, I think that's a, I mean, that's actually an example, I think, of, you know, if we can implement a policy like this that still has a level of comparability between the tests given, isn't this more reflective of sort of pluralistic urges in the public education system to have differences between schools rather than one test that everyone must follow?
I will be very curious to see what happens to that. I think having it at the high school level is geared very much towards school districts that would just like to move to using the SAT or ACT as their way of addressing that at the high school level. Mm-hmm. And that's a little different than at the elementary and secondary level. Mm-hmm. But it does create a little bit of, it's different from an entire state like Michigan did moving to the SAT or ACT
right.
as their high school assessment.
Yeah. I mean, personally, maybe you can talk me out of this. Like, what would be wrong with the state just giving everyone the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, the Stanford 10, and, you know, do it on the second to the last day of school instead of a month before school is out, and therefore the last day of school becomes the after-test period instead of the last month of school? Tell me why I'm crazy.
You have repeated exactly what I heard, and I bet you heard, from a number of district administrators in the 1990s.
Is that right?
That is almost precisely, I'm trying to remember the name of a single administrator. This says something about my Swiss cheese-like memory and falls out the holes. That I heard a number of administrators and some faculty at the time who have mm-hmm. since retired say, well, what we should, of course we should have tests. We should be the Iowa Test of Basic Skills and put it in a vault. And anybody who wants to take a look at it can take a look at it. Now, obviously, the put it in a vault is a little bit different.
Right.
We had already moved to newspapers publishing league tables of test score summaries.
Right. It's all out on the internet now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not clear to me what the current system delivers that system wouldn't. Is it clear to you?
Not really, except that it is possible to construct assessments that are tied more closely to curriculum. Mm-hmm. The big beef with generic norm reference testing is that they tend to, A, require repeated norming, otherwise you get the so-called Lake Wobegon effect, where all the children in the country are above average after a few years.
So
you can't just, you know, do it on the cheap type of thing. And B, that to some extent then a test, no matter what its origins, in some ways tends to drive curriculum. It's not the content of the test, it's the stakes of the test. Mm-hmm. And the argument of Lauren Resnick almost 30 years ago was the reason why we should have better assessment is it's going to drive instruction. And the better assessment that we have, the less we have to worry about how testing can drive instruction.
That's the theory, yes.
That's the theory. I was not persuaded at the time, and I'm not persuaded. Mm-hmm. But it is something that we do see across decades and a couple of centuries that you can see where there are stakes attached to testing. You often see that sometimes deliberately driving instruction.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, that's clearly one of the most perverse, unintended consequences of all this.
I'm not so sure that it's entirely unintended.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, there are lots of people who will defend testing through saying that these tests are good enough, it's okay for it to drive instruction. I have some severe concerns about it. Any of us who have children, mm-hmm. who are old enough to complain about annual testing,
right.
have heard those complaints.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, my oldest just graduated from high school, and I experienced this as a parent, right? My own kids love school in grades K through 2, but grade 3, you know, out came the worksheets, and yeah, I mean, it's people are unhappy with this for a reason. You know, I mean, and you pointed out earlier, we live in a democracy. it seems to me that the opt-out movement is not an appropriate, sort of avenue for this frustration. The concern I have about the opt-out movement is that we'll never know who got nudged out, right? I saw it originally being from Texas, for instance. They set the accountability, the high school exit exam was set at 10th grade. And statewide, you saw this clear pattern of just way more ninth graders than anything else, right? And they even had a term for it, which was the red shirt year, right? So the kids that weren't doing so well were red shirted in ninth grade. And then mysteriously, some of them would, you know, evaporate before they take that 10th grade test. We do bake incentives into our schooling systems when we make decisions like this. So I tend to think that where we need to go is sort of a lighter footprint system, right? One that maintains some transparency, but, you know, also which is more respectful of where the public is on this stuff. You look skeptical.
No. No? I've been arguing for that lighter footprint for somewhat over a decade.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we will know what will happen unless someone actually tries it.
Right. No, I agree. And it's difficult. I mean, just look at the experience with the menu of assessments here in Arizona is telling us that this is not going to be an easy transition. All right, well, why don't we end there with a note of agreement, and thank you, Dr. Dorn.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.